everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Keatley.
And on today's episode, we're talking The Curse of La Llorona, Michael Chavez's ode to the popular Mexican folk story in which a ghostly woman in white stalks and kills young children. Does this horror film introduce some much-needed Latinx representation into American horror film, or does its potential go unmet? We're debating cultural depictions of otherness in this episode, so stay tuned. Quick synopsis for all of you who may not have seen the movie. We open in 1673 Mexico with a family frolicking on the countryside. A domestic dispute ensues in which the mother murders her two children by drowning them. We then flash forward to 1973 Los Angeles, in which recently widowed caseworker Anna Tate Garcia intervenes when a mother is found to be hiding her children in a locked closet, so as to stave off a demonic spirit intent on killing the children. A spirit who soon turns her attention to Tate Garcia's own children. So guys, what's the verdict? What did you think about this one?
I liked it. I did. You guys are all staring at me.
Yes, I love The Conjuring, and I have to admit, I kind of hated this.
That took a turn.
I did not like this at all, and we can explore the reasons. I'm not one to trash movies, but it seemed like he didn't care. It was just like going through the motions. Someone is just churning this out to capitalize on The Conjuring success. And there wasn't any sense of, I don't know, heart or innovation or interest in it. It felt like horror by the numbers to me. I guess that would be my slogan or my title if I were writing something about it.
I'd give you that. I mean, compared to the other Conjuring series films, yeah, it definitely pales in comparison. But I think compared to many of the horror films that have been released in the last 2 years, I think it does a decent job, but it doesn't do anything unique with the plot. Although I think it did much more with its plot than the remake of Pet Sematary.
For example.
For an example. Again, I don't want to trash movies either, but... Yeah.
I'm completely comfortable trashing movies, but I have to say this one I wouldn't even trash. It was just boring. And I feel like it's been a series of boring films for me lately, and I don't know if I'm expecting to see more innovation because the bar is so high right now with different horror films. But this one just seemed, like you said, that there was no intent behind it. There was no attempt to try to even take what is a pretty popular Mexican folktale and do something innovative with it, because this is not the first cinematic adaptation.
No.
So if you're going to go to ground that's already been covered, you have to give us a why. And this gave me the exact opposite. I was just bored.
I think kind of going back to like when we talked about Crawl, I didn't fall in love with any of the characters. Like nobody stood out. In fact, when, you know, thank God you have names written down, because nobody did stand out to me in terms of actual characters.
Right.
And there wasn't exactly like a slow building dread, but I did think it had a good couple of like rapid fire jump scares, which I enjoyed because I haven't had a movie in a hot minute that's made me go, ooh, roll up that window. Like when that kid was like, you know, having to roll up the car window. First of all, it took me back to the car windows that you had to roll up. Yeah, that was a thing, guys.
That was good. I like that part.
But I was just like, ooh, roll that up, roll that up.
You're talking about a scene that was fairly early on when Chris, one of Anna's two children, sort of wanders off and, La Llorona sort of comes at him. I thought that was the scariest part of the film and the best part of the film.
Yeah, even when he runs into her in like the alleyway and she starts to, you know, she turns around and looks at him. Like just, there was a good 5-10 minutes, like back to back. I was just like, oh, no. Don't go down that alley. No. Roll up that window. So that I enjoyed about it. I don't know.
I just kept thinking, you know, the kid wasn't listening to instructions, so he gets what he deserves. And I don't know.
But isn't that one of the premises a lot of times, too, that La Llorona will come for misbehaving children? Because in several of the adaptations, that's kind of one of the precursors, too. Even though I don't think he was being a bad kid. Because then you also get into the film where... The first woman that was being followed by La Llorona, what's her name?
Patricia Alvarez.
She says that she kind of prayed to her to go after this family.
Right.
So that's
which was interesting to me.
That was
the idea that one mother would turn a demonic spirit against another.
Well, because she felt that that mother took her kids.
Right, but that through line didn't follow enough to make me invested in the movie. I feel like it had potential. Yeah. It just didn't follow through on it.
I mean, when you try to think about what's unique about this film, I mean, it really was all about motherhood, it seems to me. Mm-hmm. And that's not exactly unique in horror, but it is something that this film does. It's about motherhood. I mean, in the first scene, we get Anna, who's a social worker, at work. I think this is the first, or it's early in the film. And her boss is taking cases away from her because I guess she's been preoccupied, like she has children. And he's giving her cases to a woman.
Younger woman.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't have children and who has a husband.
Right.
And Anna does not have a husband. Her husband's dead. So right from the beginning, like, motherhood is a problem. And then obviously we have the folktale of the woman in Mexico in 1673 who drowned her children because her husband was unfaithful. Should have drowned him.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But then we get the first mother, Patricia Alvarez, who is pursued by La Llorona, and then when her children are dead, it's almost like she passes La Llorona on to Anna, the second mother. Both Patricia and Anna are single mothers. So this is all about motherhood, and honestly, like, when I wasn't being bored by the film, I was wondering, like, this does seem to be punishing mothers. I guess that's the question. Is La Llorona about punishing mothers for something?
Specifically single mothers in this case.
Specifically single mothers. One of them, a Latina mother.
I don't know.
So I felt that it was. I mean, I felt like there was almost a nasty strand of hostility directed toward mothers. Now, that's actually kind of a preoccupation of the Conjuring universe, right? In the first Conjuring, the witch or whatever she was possessing the mother to kill the children. But I didn't feel like there was animus toward the mother in The Conjuring. Here, it seemed to be all the mother's fault.
It is. And you know what? I hadn't looked at it like that until we started talking about it. Because, again, my worldview, I immediately started to look at CPS worker versus family. And I know that we'll talk about that at some point.
CPS being Child Protective Services worker. Okay.
Yeah. So I saw that the Hispanic mother was being almost vilified by the social services. Like, there was just assumptions made. And again, you have that CPS worker that comes in that's not culturally competent, doesn't understand people's backgrounds, their beliefs, and just didn't understand where the family was coming from. Just mows in the door and starts trying to rip kids out of the house.
Yeah. And that's actually what starts it all.
Yeah.
Like, and it's Anna who's the social worker, so we should have some sympathy for her. But she did just, like, grab the key to the closet. She rips the closet door open, even as Patricia Alvarez was saying, "Don't open the door!"
And there technically wasn't any sounds coming from the inside of that door. So it's not like she knew that the kids were inside that door.
Yeah, they weren't in there yelling for help.
No. And in fact, as soon as she gets in the door, they're like, "Please close the door."
Yeah.
"You're going to let her in." And she specifically asked, "Do your mother?" And they said, "No, not my mother."
Yeah.
But I think it definitely is punishing mothers. Do you think that it was punishing one mother more than others, or just single mothers, or?
Well, there's a little bit of empathy built into La Llorona's story on the whole, because she murders the children, but then she instantly, once the madness subsides, she's instantly overcome with grief. And so you get the scene of her sobbing, and that's supposed to be the genesis of her looking for these children. Yeah. As she's trying
she's
to find
La Llorona, the weeping woman.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there is a little bit of sympathy for her, especially the way it plays out in the end when you see her ghost figure morph into her human form briefly. Yeah. But for the two single women in the film, it definitely positions them both as, like, outliers within the community, but also against one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not even a case of two women in similar circumstances supporting one another. Instead, they pit them against each other. Yeah. So it is, like, actively violent against single motherhood, at least in this film.
Yeah. I mean, Anna doesn't trust Patricia, so she rips the closet door open and then, you know, causes the death of Patricia's children, who then, you know, sicks this evil spirit onto her.
The scene, though, where she does go, the caseworker does go to the house, that's an interesting one, I think, because what do you do? If you know that children have been missing and you have a mother come to the door and she's clearly disheveled and there seems to be something amiss, what would the proper response be? If you know that all signs point to something being behind that door, do you rip it open or do you wait? I don't know.
There's so many protocols that were broken on right. so many levels anyway. Like, she shouldn't have gone in there alone, you know, without that police officer. She shouldn't have let somebody lock the door behind her. I mean, nobody in these horror films follows standard CBS protocol, let's be honest. And realistically, the person that would probably be opening up that door would be law enforcement. Like, right. she's not going to just start yanking doors off of hinges and snatching up things.
But... Oh, sure. No, I'm thinking more like in terms of, as an audience member, do I identify with the caseworker? Or do I identify with the mother? Because I think, for me at least, I started by identifying with the caseworker, thinking, okay, if I was in that situation, yeah, I'd want to know if the kids were okay behind the door. But as the movie progresses, my allegiance switched more to Patricia Alvarez. And I even understood why, you know, in her grief, just like La Llorona, she would try to sic the spirit on Tate Garcia.
My allegiance would have been with the mother. Because at first I was like, well, she was doing what she thought was best for her kids, period. Yeah. In line with her cultural beliefs and the cultural stories. And if you genuinely believe and have seen with your own eyes, because you see later on that she's got the marks of her, so she knows this to be true. She's not, you know, ill or anything along those lines. So if you know that to be true, you do what you got to do to protect your kids, you know, despite what anybody else understands.
But when Tate Garcia got to the house, all she saw were two children locked behind a door and one of the children with significant burns.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So I wonder what that does for audience identification, because I think you're right. It's too easy to ignore cultural understanding and how people see the world differently.
I mean, there should just have been more communication. I mean, this kind of enraged me. I mean, Anna, the caseworker, insists on going to Alvarez's house because she says she's known her for years.
Right.
Like, so she goes because she has a relationship. But the minute she walks in the door, it's like that relationship is thrown out the window. I mean, could she not have... I'm saying this knowing it would not have been a horror movie if she'd done
right.
this.
Right.
Sat down and talked about it.
Had some tea, you know.
But it was frustrating.
And then the... Yeah, like... It would have been hard to believe what she said, obviously. And I wonder if it is. I never thought about this. I wonder if it is kind of a metaphor for cultural difference. Like, Anna couldn't grasp what Patricia Alvarez was doing. And we know it's because the supernatural is involved. But could that be some sort of metaphor for that complete lack of comprehension among different groups of people that ends up, you know, causing destruction and pain and everything?
Going back to the single mothers, too, it's almost as if every single mother throughout the film is weaponized.
Yes.
So you think about La Llorona, she becomes weaponized, you know, and then same thing with Patricia, she does too. And then Anna, in some sorts, in her lack of ability to become culturally aware of somebody's beliefs, was also part of that catalyst.
That gets to a problem that I had with this film, like the weaponizing of the mother. This film starts with a relatively positive portrayal of the original La Llorona in 1673. I mean, you mentioned that she's happy dancing with her children and her husband. Her husband is unfaithful, so she drowns her two kids and she's grief-stricken. Okay, then later in the film, we get Rafael, the curandero or shaman, in his sort of over-the-top, heavy-handed way, saying, "We are facing an evil that has no bounds. She's just a dark spirit, one wholly forsaken by God." And I'm like, how did this relatively sympathetic, like, I mean, she was insane when she killed her children. Like, how did she become this evil thing anyway? Or are we not supposed to ask that?
Isn't it also too, I know that they talk about it, and you see it in J-horror a lot too, that when somebody dies in horrific circumstances, that's when they kind of become.
And she did kill herself after she killed her children, yeah.
So yeah, whenever there's that overly emotional kind of disaster.
And you just become evil, you become an evil spirit.
It just kind of wanders around, yeah. In J-horror, it's usually in the house, and I guess here it's outside of the house. And
then you become an evil that has no bounds.
But that tracks in real life too, especially when it's mothers killing their children.
Yeah.
Because I remember in South Carolina, there was the case of the woman who drove into the, I think it was a lake, with her
was
children.
Was that Susan Smith, I think?
Yeah.
And then it was Andrea Yates, who drowned six children.
And they're initially vilified. It's just like absolute monsters. And it's only sort of later that you realize, you know, there's mental illness. There are other extenuating factors as well.
But when you have guys that are family annihilators, like you have, you know, John exactly. Lists and stuff like that, whom at least, you know, you have something like Stepdad that was kind of made about, but like definitely not the same kind of thing.
No. Because it does tie into our expectation, I think, of mothers as just being inherently sensitive and giving, and your expectation is quote unquote more than with fathers, which is why I think you see the difference in
horror
films.
Politicians are supposed to be trustworthy.
So, I mean,
not everything is what it's supposed to be.
Exactly.
So that's why mothers swing toward pure evil then, right? Because they're supposed to be more perfect and more pure. So when they falter from that, then they're an evil that has no bounds.
All or nothing. Yeah.
And I don't think we're used to reading women in shades of gray culturally.
That's a good
and
point.
So you're either, you know, the Madonna, the whore, or, you know, the monster or the ingenue who's running from the monster.
And it's interesting that the woman, La Llorona, was either black or white. I mean, you know, she had the white veil, or at other times when she didn't have her veil, she had the black tears running down her blackened face.
Yeah.
So is the film making a commentary then on the stereotypes that confine women, that women become evil if they falter from their pure moral goodness? No.
As you say, do I think that they try
to think that?
No. But I feel like you said, you know, gender does come up throughout that series of films. Sure, absolutely. But do I think that they intended this? No. We're just super smart.
But see, this is what I love. Movies that bored me, I'm like, oh, wait, maybe I was more interested than I thought.
Yeah.
Sure are. You're going to have to watch all of the adaptations that are on Netflix and, you know. Yeah, absolutely. You're going to love it. It's going to be great.
That's a no.
You're going to watch the cartoon with me?
I will watch the cartoon.
Okay.
Yeah, I will link to that into the show notes, too, because that looks good. Yeah, there are quite a few adaptations, though. A couple of us watched, which one did we watch?
By a couple, she means everybody but Gwen.
I wasn't going to call anybody out, but that one was from 1961, wasn't it?
The Curse of the Crying Woman, or La Maldición de la Llorona.
That flew right off your tongue, like you're fluent.
No.
That was good.
Totally bilingual.
I took one semester of Spanish in college. A long time ago.
But that is the adaptation I would actually recommend to people, because I thought it was way better done. It's a weird movie in that it feels like it's from the 1930s instead of the 1960s, but the shots are really inventive. I thought the storytelling was great. It's funny and a little bit campy as well, but it also seemed to be a little bit more in line with like a Mexican horror film.
Yeah.
In that it appreciated the cultural lineage of the film in a way that I don't think this one did.
Yeah. I'll give you that 100%. This one was totally co-opted.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd be curious what you guys thought about, particularly Raphael, because I don't know if it was a case of poor acting choices. Or if it was in the script, but they really, to me, it was comedic because it was so over the top and it was so overdone, and everything he said was important and pressing. It was a lot. And so when he, in his facial reaction, so when things would happen, I would find myself chuckling at the screen, and that was the time I would be engaged. I was like,
he did have some good little one-liners, like, ta-da.
Yeah, but I don't know that was intended to be like, ta-da.
Well, because she accused him of being like a magician or something like that, or what are you going to use, your magic or something to that effect. So he was firing back at, once again, her cultural, like, way offedness. That's the PC term, I guess. I don't know.
Way offedness. It was interesting to me, though, that they decided to use smudging as the activity that was so bizarre to her that, you know, it really separated him out from Christianity. Because I thought, again, it's 2019, so I know smudging is normal. I smudge my house.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know a lot of people that do.
And I feel like in the 70s, that was still a thing, too.
When they were burning the...
Yeah, so smudging is when you take incense and you, like, you can do it on a person or you can do it in a house, and it's supposed to get rid of evil spirits or evil energy.
Oh, Things that are attached to you.
There's a woman, and actually I think she may be a Latina, in Paranormal Activity 2 who does that.
A lot of times they'll burn sage throughout the house.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Did they do that in Poltergeist? I can't remember if Zelda Rubinstein did.
There's a top 10 smudging list in your future.
Yeah, there is. Top 10 smudgers.
Yeah, I have no idea why he was kicked out of the church. We should move on to the next problem with the film. I mean, just the plot twists were just a little absurd. I have so many questions. First of all, if she wants to kill the children, if La Llorona wants to kill the children, why doesn't she do it? I mean, she's just like popping up at them in the window.
Because they were white kids. You got to save the white kids in all these horror films. Isn't that just how it goes? I mean, I'm not even being a jerk about this. Like, it's always the white kids that live.
Yeah, it's true. Patricia Alvarez's children were killed pretty swiftly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, I mean, the mythology of La Llorona is, like, she just wants to take your children and drown them, and yet she didn't.
I didn't understand the point of burning them. I guess maybe marking them.
Yeah, I guess she marked them.
And then coming back for them later.
Or she just couldn't hold on to these little white kids. I don't know. She could just grab them, but they always got away.
The Alvarez children, had the marks as well.
I mean, it seemed like it took her a while even to get those. I just don't know, like, what was she playing around at? I mean,
maybe there's so many children to get that she has to go back.
Here's that commentary again, though. Like, I'm going back to those marks. So as soon as the Hispanic kids have marks on their arms, we got to think the worst and we're making a game plan for removal. When the two little white kids have marks on their arms, her boss and that perky little, you know, person that's trying to take her cases come in and it's, oh, no, this household's fine.
Oh, see, I didn't get that vibe at all. I thought even her partner was sort of questioning her.
But they walked out and left her kids.
Well, but that would be the difference is I think he thought she was doing something, but he told her to get it together.
Yeah, that's right. He says get it together and then he leaves.
When somebody actually has any kind of credibility in that type of job would have put some kind of a safety plan in place. I completely agree with you.
Your
kids have unexplained marks all over their body. So...
Yeah. Yeah, and you're exactly right. Like, in horror, it is the children of color who are expendable.
Yeah. And the people of color, period. Those are the tropes that they make fun of in even all the horror comedies. So you see, you know, what, Scary Movie, and they even joke about how the first people to die are black characters.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about the relatively uncommonness of children dying in horror films, the fact that it tends to be children of color is even more pronounced. Yeah.
I was a little shocked that the Alvarez children died and that, you know, like near the beginning of the film and we see their bodies and, you know, that. And then you just know, that the white children are not going to be captured in the end. Though they're pretty dumb.
Yeah, they're
super dumb.
Yeah, they're dumb.
This was another, I just was so rolling my eyes at this. Like when Rafael the curandero... You know, he's doing all his little weird things to keep them safe. And he sets up a line of fire tree seeds by the door. And he's like, all you have to do is not break them. Seconds later, the girl is like dragging her knee across the
Because she had to do something to let you know she was in the bloody film. Because I don't even think she spoke two words.
She didn't do much else.
But that was my issue with the film. Because she's going to reach for the doll. And it, you know, rips out. If you're in this situation where a demonic spirit is trying to get you in your house, who the hell separates? Don't you stay huddled together? Like, but they had people going to different rooms.
It's the plot of every Scooby-Doo.
I'm like, what are you doing?
But that's the one thing I did enjoy about this film is it took me back to some of that stupid stuff that when you were kind of even newer to horror films, you were like, don't go up those stairs. Don't look behind that door.
No.
I know. We're so beyond that. No. Sometimes I still just love that.
Campy and funny. And Liz was going to ask us if this was a parody.
No.
Definitely not supposed to be, but it could be.
So I have to give a shout out to the person whose article created that idea for me. It's Danette Chavez for the AV Club, was writing about the mythology and relating it to the Conjuring franchise. And she questioned whether, you know, all of the characters getting flung about made it a parody. And I liked that in the article because I was like, that's exactly what I felt like I was watching.
Really?
There was no way any of that should have been intentional. I mean, from the sight gags, quote unquote, to the over-the-top characters, to the questions. I mean, there's huge plot holes. It felt like a parody film.
I don't think it was definitely intended
to be. No, I don't think so either, but that's...
It definitely felt like one. Like, another thing that Raphael did to get to plot holes, he suddenly has, like, a test tube full of tears from La Llorona.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Which he sanctified.
Good for him.
And
good
I'm for like,
what like, good shaman doesn't?
Where did he get those?
This is a serious problem. I think that any good shaman would have that.
Would have the tears.
But it's not like that's
Llorona.
On Amazon.
Well, that's not like, I mean, look, if I hunt werewolves, I'm going to have some silver bullets. This is what he does. So I have to just assume his authority.
But he has her tears.
I can't with you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sure does.
I cannot believe you are actively defending this movie.
It's not like I loved it, but I'm just having fun now.
Oh, my goodness.
What other plot twists were there that you had a hard
those
time?
Those were the main things that really bothered me. Like, the mythology is she just wants to drown children, so why doesn't she do it? I mean, I watched Grimm, the TV series Grimm, which has an episode on La Llorona, and, you know, she gets down to business.
I love
she
that show.
She just finds the children, takes them in the lake.
Rapid fire, but only on Halloween.
Yes.
Only on Halloween. But I was reading that article that I was telling you about, and they kind of talk about how the Grimm show did at least a better job of it than the Supernatural one. Because the Supernatural one, they turn her into like a whore. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's in line with the original.
That might be a new take.
Yeah.
And also, I guess my last major problem with this is that this film is The Conjuring. I mean, the plot is identical, right? I mean, okay, we have, and you began with this, Liz, there's the Latinx representations. We don't have the all-white, I'm forgetting the name of the Conjuring family. But it honestly, it seemed to me at every point to just follow the plot of The Conjuring, even to the point where, you know, well, and this is a cliche, but Raphael, who had all the bad lines, says, she's attached herself to your family, not to the house. If you move, she'll follow you. I mean, look, oh my God, how many possession films are we going to have where that's... But, you know, in The Conjuring, it's like she's attached herself to your children. But, yeah, it's like a...
She needs a good smudging.
A mother who's possessed. There are jump scares. The La Llorona even looked a little bit like the woman in The Conjuring, the evil witch, whatever she was.
And when we do talk about it being part of the Conjuring universe, it's a specific universe. So that's comprised of the Conjuring series, the Annabelle series, the Nun series, and then there's also this movie as well as The Crooked Man, which is coming.
What's The Crooked Man? Is that connected to La Llorona?
It's listed as other films within the universe.
Just
so
other.
Like this one. This is the only other one, but it's a TBA. So, but there is going to be a new Conjuring, and there's going to be a new Annabelle, and there's going to be
a new Nun.
Was
just a new Annabelle.
So, right. Film. So. So this universe shows no signs of dying.
They're milking it to death.
And I feel like as it's going on, it is becoming more and more parody. So I'm interested to see what these other films are looking like. I mean, at some point, it has to be, right? Because the universe has already been established and then deconstructed. So what's left?
So it's basically, you think it's going to go the way of like the Friday the 13th franchise where that became clearly pretty self-parody?
I think so, because I think it's starting with this film.
Did Saw, because they had equally an overabundance of films.
No, that always took, I watched that relentlessly through to the end, and
it always do it.
Very self. I liked Saw much better than this film.
Yeah,
but Saw is interesting, though, because the first Saw is relatively, it's always cited as like torture porn, but the first Saw is not.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it gets to that point, but so maybe it needs an influx of violence instead of, because this was relatively, there's no real blood. You see children sacrifice, but you don't actually see the murders
take place. No, you just kind of see them wet.
So it's very much removed from the action. You're not like participant in it. You're more just like a spectator.
Right, because God forbid horror films have an R rating again.
I mean, that's
what we had talked about before.
Was this rated R? I can't remember.
I don't think so.
This had to have been like PG-13.
I know. I don't even think they cursed.
Look how disappointed you are by that.
I know. I am. There's certain things I like with my horror. A little bit of blood.
I don't remember seeing any blood, actually.
No. So. Except for her tears, theoretically.
I was just going to say the tears.
Which looked a little bit more like, I don't know, oil, but.
Black paint.
Yeah.
It was rated R.
Was
Get
it?
Get out.
How?
Why?
Because a kid died? I mean, yes, that's terrible,
it.
Folks. That's terrible. However, in a horror film, I don't know if that quite justifies the little hump over. Get out. No. Now I'm disappointed. Now I hate the film. I changed my view.
Well, the one thing we really probably do have to unpack is the way race manifests itself in the film, because before we started, we had a pretty active debate as to whether or not Anna Tate Garcia is she white? Because I read her as white.
I read her as white.
So Linda Cardellini, who was fabulous on Freaks, if you haven't seen that, you really need to go see that. Yes,
yeah.
Freaks and Geeks, is listed not as a Mexican-American woman. I went to her Wikipedia page, which is the source of all information, and she is of Italian, Irish, German, and Scottish descent. So my question is, what does it mean that the main focus of our attention in this film is drawing from a Mexican mythology, but it's centered on a white woman.
Yeah, problem.
That's a huge problem for me. The entire film, that bothered me. I was like, why are we not dealing with Patricia Alvarez's grief and what she's experiencing? Why is it centered on this white woman?
I think that's the bigger problem I had with the film. Because, like, we talked about the forest, and you had Aokigahara Forest. And, yeah, nailed it. I don't think I had as much of a problem with kind of, like, taking that legend and history of that. And I know that that's a bigger debate that's happened in social media and in here. But I could handle that. I think this film, I was like, damn, we just took that Mexican legend and bastardized it and made the Mexican woman look bad.
Yes.
Yep.
Like, no, that's not cute. So, yeah.
And I wonder, do they just think that we need to have a white woman centralized in order to care?
Oh, it's totally the dangerous mind. You know, Michelle Pfeiffer is going to save the day.
But what's interesting is that Tay Garcia does not save the day. She has to go to Raphael in order to be able to deal with this spirit. So,
and he is Latino, right?
Right, but he's male. So there's like some gender issues as well as some race issues that I just thought were frustrating. And I'm like, I just feel icky with the way the story was presented because it is so entrenched as a Mexican folk story. Like, that's its origin. And I felt like you lost all of that.
And there's not really anything comparable anywhere else. Like, this is a pretty uniquely Hispanic legend or folklore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to kind of...
But did we all read her as a white woman?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
I did too.
And they make it kind of purposeful in that I mean, Liz, you mentioned this before we started talking. I believe there's one quick shot of a photograph of her and her husband, whose last name is Garcia and who clearly is Hispanic and who died before the movie begins. And he's much darker than her. I mean, the contrast is right there in the photograph and his last name, obviously.
It's so funny because I didn't even realize that until you guys mentioned it. Like, that shot must have been so quick. That it was lost on me until you said it, because I thought the whole family was white, and I was like, not good. But even still, I don't even think that I think this actually might even make it worse. Like, it was totally tokenism.
Because it's tokenism. Yeah, exactly.
So.
I mean, all it does, with her having the Latino husband, it just makes it even more like, well, why wasn't she? Like, she's the central character in this film about a Mexican folktale, and you're sort of desperately trying to surround her with Hispanic characters, but not the main character herself. Like, what's that about?
I just find it interesting, too. So you have the original mother, Patricia. She is at least able to be honest about La Llorona. She can be like, okay, this is what's following me. But then when you get to Anna... Like, she doesn't really speak of it to anybody but Raphael. So when her coworkers came to the house, it's not like she could. It was like a dirty little secret to her, which then implies that she thinks that this is cuckoo.
Right.
Whereas the other woman thinks that this is just part of the world. Like, this is part of my world.
I mean, if we're going to be kind, though, to Anna, maybe she realizes or recognizes that the way the authority system is set up, that no one will take her seriously because she didn't take Patricia seriously. So maybe she understands inherently what the problems are going to be because she did it herself.
Well, yeah, I guess she was part of a system that's a little crooked, so she knows that they can be, too.
I mean, that happens in most horror films, right, about possessions. Like, there's this... Well, actually, though, not in The Conjuring. Like, aren't there all kinds of police and religious people in the house with them? There's a police officer in there with them, though he doesn't believe them until he sees a ghost one night. But yeah, there's this separation between institutions, which, like social workers, the church, the police, the medical profession. And yeah, they're always... skeptical, won't believe the supernatural. But in this case, that happens in a film that's also kind of racialized, and that seems a little problematic.
That made me think about how you were talking beforehand about the role of welfare workers in horror. And do you think this is sort of consistent with that depiction? Because I've never really thought about that, to be honest.
Because I was even thinking about something like Case 39. Like, you have these, a lot of times in horror films, you just have this benevolent little social worker who's gonna save the world, and you know, it's always some white lady who can come in, swoop in, save everybody's day. And then all these terrible things happen to her, but she fought that valiant fight. And I find that that's interesting because, you know, even if you don't take it from people that, you know that have encountered child welfare workers, even if you just, you know, read some of the experiences that people have had with child welfare workers, it's not always very positive. And I mean, I understand they have a hard job. I was a CPS worker, trust me. But I just don't think that that's the wider held opinion. So I find it so interesting that they are portrayed that way in horror films. I don't know.
Is that an example, though, of like reinforcing the establishment, much like?
Probably.
But it's interesting. The police are always
white establishment, though.
White establishment. That's
because if you're really saying that horror films are cultural representatives of our collective fears, which every scholar out there has said and most lay people can understand, it's white people's fears because a lot of white people might not see these people as bad, these authority figures as menacing.
It's a really good point.
Yeah.
And that's all I got.
No, that's really important. I think that's really, really important. So not to bring politics into this, but I think it's kind of inevitable with this type of movie.
Yeah.
Given the atrocities that are happening at the border and the fact that here we just had a film that so carelessly disregarded the lives of two Mexican-American children.
Oh, and tried to separate families?
Yeah.
Lock them in cages.
Yeah. Yes. It resonates in a lot of ways that clearly were not intentional.
No. Yeah.
But watching it now, I mean,
I'm surprised they didn't pull it like The Hunt.
I mean, yeah. You're going to set Dawn off.
She's going to say, listen. We'll save that for a later podcast episode, people.
Oh, my goodness. But there is something to that. I mean, if there's going to be anything interesting about this film and why I might recommend it, it would be because of those sort of overtones.
Well, what do you think it's doing with them? I'm trying to work through that because I hadn't really thought about that myself. So, yeah.
To me, it was just an example of how culturally we dehumanize people who are not white Americans.
Yeah.
And that there's a thorough misunderstanding of people, an inherent misunderstanding of cultures. Like, even if you're talking politics.
And I have to say, too, like, what comes to my mind is that when this film draws lines between good and protective and bad and threatening is Hispanic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, that's how the mother, Patricia Alvarez, gets positioned. She's the one locking the children in the closet. It's a Mexican woman ghost or evil that is killing her children. And all of the institutional authorities, the police, the priest, the caseworker, they're the ones who are protecting the children.
Mm-hmm.
So it's drawing lines that are a lot different than the political reality you were just mentioning, where things are more murky.
Do you ever get the sense that Patricia had already met with Raphael? Because if you remember in the beginning of the film, when Anna goes into the house, Patricia already has all those candles lit. And that was part of the ritual that Raphael had Anna do later on.
You know, I never really thought about it. I mean, I guess it could be that, or it could just be shared cultural understanding.
I was just going to say, unless it's,
yeah.
I was just curious.
I mean, I feel like we took up this question when we talked about Pet Sematary, you know, and the whole issue of cultural appropriation, you know, sort of taking, or it was the Native Americans who had the beliefs about burying and then resurrecting the dead. And here, I mean, I guess in a sense, to go back to the thing you said right at the beginning, Liz, is there any value? I mean, you said maybe the only thing that's interesting about this film is the representations of Latinx characters and culture. Is that a point of value? Is it good? Is it good that this is about La Llorona and not just, as in The Conjuring, I mean, just some witch from Salem, or akin to Salem, Massachusetts?
And I think for me, the answer depends on Raphael. And I think if I could have taken Raphael as a serious character who was adding value and sort of helping to guide people who are not familiar with that mythology in a way that was productive, I would say absolutely good representation. But the fact that it feels like it's taking this mythology and just whitewashing it in every possible way and just using characters in very like token ways.
Yeah.
I'm not somebody who thinks representation at any cost.
Yeah.
I would rather it be positive.
Well, this is something that you and I have talked about even too when we were like, you know, working on our book is there really an American monster like or a supernatural folklore? And I think that everything that we have has come from somewhere else except for our serial killers.
Right.
So when you have like your Jason's, that's what we've brought to the table. You're welcome, everybody. There you go.
Our work here is done.
Yes. As you know, we have our Jason's and Freddy's. Like, we have made some of those amazing, like, just monsters. But as far as something supernatural, we have no history. Because
there is Salem.
Well, but
and
even
that's
still,
what
that.
In the country.
But even that, I feel like, came from the people that came here.
Yeah, from Europe. And yeah.
So it's still a very European, because we were talking about, you know, does, you know, colonialism matter in some of the countries that we were talking about? And I think it does. Like, we don't really have our own history, which, other than, you know, Native American history, but that's not our history. We stole theirs. So I don't know what we have.
Yeah, we
creepy basements and serial killers. That's
crawl spaces.
Crawl
in particular.
Spaces. Totally.
They're very American.
Living in walls. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and alligators.
Oh, yeah.
Alligators.
Oh, yeah.
I
think the Australians have done a good job with those, too.
The Australians have probably bigger ones than we do.
We don't have much to go from. So I feel like almost every story going forward we make is going to be some kind of appropriation. Don't have our own rich history.
All right. So shall we sum up all the things that are bad about the Curse of La Llorona before we wrap up?
The beginning to the end.
Would you tell somebody to get it on Redbox or on Netflix or on some kind of thing that they didn't really have to?
You know, I wouldn't, because there's just too much good horror right now that I would actually enthusiastically recommend.
Like what? I'm not saying there's not. I'm just asking for an example of, like.
I mean, I'm obsessed with Midsommar, and Dawn's probably sick of me talking about it, but I love that movie. Yeah.
Okay. How about you? Know, any good horror out?
I mean, I liked the last movie I saw in a theater was Crawl, and I loved that. I liked that more than this.
I liked The Perfection on Netflix. That was a good
The Perfection.
I loved The Perfection.
Oh, it was technically well produced. I mean, you know, like the look of it was similar to The Conjuring. Not as good, but similar. I just thought it was just utterly predictable. The characters, well, Raphael was a caricature. I mean, the other acting was serviceable.
Put that on the box. Serviceable acting.
Well, I think we have quite a few films that we've got in mind coming up.
Definitely.
Maybe The Perfection. Maybe I will persuade Gwen and Liz to talk about Ma when I've watched it. So I think
we
have
some good... And what was that other, Ready or Not?
Ready or Not. Excellent. Well, we're excited to hear from you guys what you think about this film.
So, tell us if you liked it.
Yes, please.
Tell us why.
Definitely tell us why.
Yeah.
And if you're not already, please follow us on all things social media at Horror Homeroom. Anything else from the Peanut Gallery?
No.
Nothing? All right. We'll talk to you later.
Bye. Bye.